back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the football season, but that won't stop us from eating crab cakes. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Friday in Timonium at Nick's Grandstand Grill in the OTB. It's all powered up by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. We'll be playing from 2 until 5. I think Leonard Raskin's going to stop by. We'll have some other friends stopping by. It's been a big month around here. My birthday this week. The team's home for a month. We got home cooking. We're 4-1. Lamar's pulling off miracles. And then I look up on it. I see Haloti Ngata and Jamal Lewis and Brian Billick and Peter Boulware and Todd Heap and all of our old friends. And I'm like, I'm going to get to all of them. And then on my Facebook page, Matt Stover showed up looking half his age. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to talk kicking with Stover. I don't want to talk about whether the Colts called him at halftime to try to sign him for the second half. But dude, what are you doing? Are you look like you're in really good shape. Are you like doing something to like some metabolic health holistic thing I'm unaware of other than just eating fruits and vegetables?
Just, I'm a Mediterranean guy. I'm Greek. Got good skin, man. God bless me with that. It's been good, Nestor. You know how it is. You're
what? Extra olive oil. You're not drinking coconut water. You're not eating chia seeds. You're not doing any of this weird stuff that I do, or no?
No, a little bit of that. Yeah.
Blueberries, anything? Nothing?
Oh, yeah. I do the coconut and I do that. I don't do the fatty, you know, acid, all that stuff. I'll do my omegas and I do all my vitamins and I sleep well. You got to sleep.
So, well, you took the athlete part of athlete seriously. You did.
Well, yeah. I mean, nutrition was a huge part of why I lasted as long as I did. I mean, if you don't recover, if you don't stay strong and healthy during the course of your career, your body's going to break down on you. The biggest tool you have as an athlete is your body, right? So you got to learn how to manage it, and nutrition was a big piece of it. So I continued that after I was playing.
I'm going to follow you around for a week or two and eat what you eat, except for the crab cakes. Because I'm on the crab cake tour. I got to do that.
Yeah, I love crab cakes. Yeah, that and pizza. Yeah.
You Texas guys in Louisiana, you come up here and, you know, you discover the good stuff. Like there's crawfish down there. You don't want all that. So, dude, I don't know where to begin with you. Let's start with the kicking thing, and then we'll get to the magic of Lamar. Because after the 66-yard field goal, I could have hit my buddy old Matt and said, come on in here and tell me how you do it. But taking it all in, knowing that, you know, were you ever given an opportunity? Did you ever miss a 70-yarder? Were you ever given one of those chances to beat Tom Dempsey or no?
61 is the longest I ever – I think I attempted. I can't remember where it was. I tried to block it out of my brain, but I didn't hit it, to say the least. You know, but Nestor, I wasn't known for the long field goals because I had to learn in the 90s how to kick on really bad fields, because back then they were redoing all the old stadiums, if you recall, and they weren't putting a lot of money into the field surfaces until the new stadium came around. And even then there was a big mess. Even at our stadium was terrible from 1999, 98, 99, 2000, 2001. And then they turned, I think, in 2002 or 3 to the field turf. Once that happened, my numbers went sky high, but the fields were so bad. So I really didn't kick a lot of long field goals, but I learned how to kick everything inside of 48 yards. So the 66 yarder flat out, man, he took an extra step with that. He did. He took an extra little hop step in order to get enough momentum into the ball. And he hit it like a kickoff. And to hit that ball like a kickoff with that much leg speed and that much force is tough to kick it straight. And that thing tracked perfectly straight the entire time. And it shows you what kind of kicker he is. And the fact it was just a great football play to even be asked to do something like that, much less execute it.
You're one of my favorites because, like, we didn't necessarily hit it off in the beginning, and I was a little weird in the locker room. And then we got to talking about kicking. And as I got to know you, as this really weird sort of scientist. Not just did you come out and drop the grass. I mean, we all can figure out which way the wind's blowing, right? But, like, the science, sports science we have now, where we get trajectory of baseballs and speed of the ball and, like, all of that. You were a little more Earl Weaver with the note cards back in the day, trying to figure all that out. That you really did have something about angle and ball. And I would talk to you and Kyle, because he was your running mate back then, about how ball spin and spin rate and all of these things that you were studying. So you are way more scientific. And if I let you nerd out, you will nerd out on me. So one of the reasons I wanted to bring you in was, maybe you believe a ball can't go 66 yards when you do what you do. You know what I mean? No. To say that no one's ever – Tom Dempsey had a stub. He didn't even have like a – I mean, it was like no one's ever done that. Erk Slaben or like – who was the kicker from Texas back – Franklin used to do barefoot back in the day, right?
Yeah.
But what's possible, right? I mean, at 66 yards.
I'm going to say that's the cap. I mean, really, that – if you go – past that, it's because you have wind behind you. Okay. Flat out.
Or Denver. You got wind behind
you. So, I mean, it's not going to happen in a dome because you don't, and he did it in a dome. I mean, there's no air. There's nothing. You got to hit the ball, and there's no altitude there either in Detroit. Right. So that what makes that very impressive. If the record's ever beat, it's, I'm telling you, it's because it's a field turf day and you got the wind behind you. That's the only way that's going to get beat. I don't see it ever getting beat indoors.
Did you have fun kicking in Denver? Was it like going to the moon a little bit for a dude like you that measures everything?
It had 5 to 7 yards on it. It did float. It really did float a lot better. I mean, I'm going to tell you, you got to think of how I viewed kicking as like a golfer views golfing. You just don't go out there and just kick the ball. I mean, yeah, you do when you're executing the actual kick, just like a golfer does when he's actually in the middle of a swing, right? When he's
over
the
ball. It's a visualization thing to some degree, where I want to put it and how I'm going to get it there.
Yeah, before the kick and the prep before it, the practice, all those things, you better be very methodical and you better have a plan about it so that when you do step over the ball, there's no doubt in your mind you're going to execute it well.
Practice makes perfect, right? Like, and I would think with kicking, my back hurts today, Matt. I've been on it for 2 weeks, a long story. It involved the Rolling Stones in the Midwest. But I've been a little crooked, a little weird, and like a little bit of that. And I would think to myself, that kicking motion all with the same leg. You know, I remember pitchers having problems with drag foot and golfers obviously the same motion because you don't turn around. You're not a switch hitter. That at some point, practicing and getting stronger and practicing, and then the ball and all the things that need to go right. There's too much practice too, right? I mean, you know, like there's only so much practice you can do when you kick a football, right?
Well, absolutely. In fact, I think what also helped me last 20 years in the NFL is how I trained. I think you noticed that I was always in the weight room, in the training room, always constantly taking care of the ball, my body and resetting my body. I did have to learn how to unwind the body. It's like I went to a exercise physiologist in Chicago that worked speed skaters, and he worked with Eric Heiden back in the day. And because a speed skater travels around the track the same way every single time, right? So your body sets up like that. So he taught Eric how to skate the other way, not 100% of what he did.
I would think he spent most of his life literally just
leaning literally, up, right?
Like a race car going in the turn.
And I'm going to, my quad on my right leg was stronger, but I trained them both the same in the weight room. So really what I was doing in the weight room is rebalancing the body, strengthening both sides so that I would stay balanced. And then I learned also how not to kick too much. I think pitch counting as a kicker is extremely important. It's just the same thing as a pitcher. You're not going to go out there and overthrow him because his body's eventually going to break down. So you just have to learn how to do that. And over the course of my career, I kicked very, very few balls in the course of a week that I had used to when I was first in the league.
Matt Stover here talking about what he is an expert on all things, kicking. You know, Hall of Fame kickers, you know, Tucker Hall of Fame. I talked to a couple guys in Indianapolis last week. Mike Chappell, I know you probably know Bob Kravitz because you kicked for a little while out there.
Yep.
We try to forget that part around here. Although I did remember at halftime when their kicker was messed up. I'm like, Stover's in the building. What? He did it once. He might do it again. But, you know, I would say for the Colts and the Ravens and, you know, all of this stuff here. And I guess the Haloti not a night. Was Monday night about as crazy a football game as you've seen, right? I mean, you've been on the sidelines for some crazy ones, but I don't know who believed that he and the team and where they were capable of that. And what this means for the team and finding the city in this electric circumstance that you're familiar with, right?
Well, I'll tell you, it shows you the resilience of what's happened in the past to the Baltimore Ravens and this team, with Lamar being the head of it. This guy is taking that team on his back still. And that the team is just doing an excellent job of believing that they could win. I'm going to also say that Harbaugh is doing an excellent job of not hitting the panic button. And the play calling and his coaches and his staff are doing an excellent job of giving that team the opportunity to go out there and make plays. They're not restricting them. They're letting them play to their strengths. I'm going to tell you, I looked at the Colts in the fourth quarter, and those defensive linemen's hands were on their knee, on their hips. They were gassed, and it's one at the line. I'm telling you, those games are one at the line, and we were killing them. They were getting no penetration. If they were, it was minor. And I just looked at our guy Lamar just wearing them out. And I think by the end of the game, we just were a better, in shape, physical team than the Indianapolis Colts.
Talking about those Indianapolis writers in the Hall of Fame part of Vinatieri was a name that came up, and Tucker. And I think Mike Chappell said, he's the voter. He said, yeah, Tucker's going to need to do it another 10 years. You know, like it doesn't stop with 66 yards and you've been really good for a long time. You're really good for a long time. A lot of kickers are given that opportunity to be really good. Matt Elam, Hansen, you go through the list of guys. That, I don't know what makes a Hall of Famer or why Morton Anderson gets that call, but Tucker, there is talk about that now and he's on that trajectory, but you're so far away from it, right? You just have to do it for so long.
But you do need to do it for a little longer than most of the other positions. I'll give you that. You know, Barry Sanders, what, played 7 years, right? And he's in the Hall of Fame. Well, yeah, I mean, he was a dominant player. I'll say this about Justin. It's the and myself. If you look at the kicker position, what effect did he have for the team that he played for? That's how you rate the kicker. Was he the player that put out Hall of Fame performances, right, during the course of his career that helped that team get to the Super Bowl, get into the playoffs, you know, win games that they shouldn't have, those type of things? What was he like in the locker room? The intangibles type of things. Was he reliable? Meaning that was he injured all the time, or did he play in every game he ever, you know, thought, like I did? Tucker's never missed a game. Those are the type of things that you look at. It's so that the player himself is looked at as a soldier, as somebody who they could depend on and make the difference for the team. It's the team that I look at for that position.
Well, the other thing is being a part of the team, right? Because it's easy, I would think, to be the kicker. They make movies about that you're over there and you run in and you do a good job, we lift you up. You do a bad job, we fire you. You know, like, and being a part of the team and the Wolf Pack and, you know, whoever the punter or the backup quarterback, whoever the holder and, you know, all snappers and all of that stuff, that fitting in was something you were always great at doing, but something that if you're going to stick around in a period of time, that to feel like you're on the team. Because I don't know that every kicker that walks in on a Wednesday, because it happens 15 teams in the league, it feels like every year fire their kicker at some point, or at least it used to be that way, crazy, right, back in your era, where you walk in the door on a Thursday and you got to make a kick on Sunday, nobody knows your name. Oh man, I can't imagine anything being more awkward than that. It'd be like me coming in after winning the game, you know.
Well, you know, I can look back at my career, and one of the things that I learned early is that as a kicker, you earn your respect by making your field goals, flat out, right? Just that's where you at. But you also, if it's off the field, that I learned how to serve. I learned how to serve my teammates, learn how to be that servant leader, which required, you know, me to be their player rep for 16 of my 20 years, for me to help them on the sideline, or if these guys were, you know, coming in late, would I get their back with their coach, or, you know, that type of things. I really became try to be a friend of theirs and really tried to serve them. And I think that if you look back at my career and you ask some of the guys, that I did that pretty well. So that gained a lot of respect for me, and a lot of the guys trusted me, you know, and, you know, on and off the field. And to me, that means everything to me, is what kind of teammate were you? And that's how I modeled myself during those years.
Players Philanthropy Fund. I see it behind you. Just a little washed out on the finger. What are you doing? Tell everybody what the Players Philanthropy Fund is. A lot of folks may not be completely familiar. I had you give me the speech a couple times. I know some people that do some work with you. And you mentioned being a player rep. You sort of slid that in. That's no small thing. One year to understand all the rules and the codicils and getting along with the union and all that. But for your whole lifetime, you've had your hands in the soup of labor through all this.
Yeah. And you know, I go back into 1992, my first year as a player rep, and we voted in the brand new free agency with cap, right, in 1993. And it was voted in 1992. That was my first year as a player rep. And I had to disseminate all the information and take the vote for the Cleveland Browns at the time to vote yes for that ratification of that collective bargaining agreement, which ended up being brilliant. Right, for the league in 19.
Well, you know, it is amazing, because I went on the radio. I'm about the 30 years. So 92 and 93, we didn't have a team, but I remember you guys doing this. And I remember how monumental that was, because I had followed labor. I'm a smart guy. I lived through Messersmith and, you know, the original free agents. I had to figure all that out. I was an Oriole fan in 1978. Daddy, why is Reggie Jackson not playing here anymore? Money. Oh, free agency. Well, they weren't free, son. And so you learn all of this. But I would say in the early 90s, I remember going on the radio when the Orioles were the Orioles, right? When you got here, and they had more money than everybody, you're kicking everybody's ass, and they could spend more money because they had 3.6 million people in the stadium that now they don't have anymore. And I thought, that's not good. It's not a fair sport. It's not fair. It's not, the Expos are going to wind up not being the Expos anymore. And they're not, right? And yeah. And the fairness of the socialism part of everybody having the same amount of money, the same amount of cap room, and Green Bay being able to sign players, which is still haunts baseball. It's been the demise of baseball over 30 years that we're in football. And I just had Coach Billick on. Every team's 9-8 or 8-9, and it's sort of designed that way. But that really came from your era saying,
parity.
We want a fair fight. We don't want what baseball has. Yeah.
We wanted parity. We did. And we knew that if we had a total pot of money that was, and we earned a percentage of that total pot of money, and it was our job to negotiate that, we did it outside of a collective bargaining agreement originally. And then once we got the CBA, we were able to negotiate a percentage of those. And it was what, 62-63%. Now it's like 48% because the owners have hammered the players down over, you know, their lockouts and, you know, the players striked, and players don't make the largest percentage, but it's a way bigger pool of money, right? What we didn't want the owners to do at that time, though, was we, as a player rep, we did not want to dictate to the owners how they had to spend the money. So where capitalism comes in is the players that are worth the most, the players that add to the play of that team the most, are going to get paid the most, right? You look at the highest paid players, they're going to produce the most. And typically 10% of your team makes most of the money. That's capitalism, because they bring the most value and they do the hardest jobs. They're the hardest jobs to replace. I appreciate that. And as a kicker, I knew that I had to bring my value up by the performance that I made. And I did very well over the 20 years that I played. Did I ever make the kind of money that quarterbacks did? No, that's why I knew I had to play longer. And I knew I had to sustain that income for a longer period of time so that therefore I would, you know, possibly end up with enough money to retire. But the NFL is not like that. I don't believe it's a sport that sets you up for life. I think it's a quick start in life. It gives you a great head start so that you can possibly do the job and the work that you really love to do for the remainder of your life. And if you leverage it that way and you're wise with that, then you're going to be okay.
What's the work you love the rest of your life? What are you doing?
I love to help people give away money. I do. The Players Philanthropy Fund was set up just for that. You know, with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and Kyrie Irving and Rudy Gay and Dwayne Wade, all these guys, they have their foundations inside of mine. They don't even have their own legal foundation entity. They just plug into mine, and I give them all the back office support that they need in order to go and operate their foundation.
Make sure they pay their taxes.
Yep. Yeah. And I take, you know, their tax return is my tax return. All their funds come in, and we make sure that it stays compliant coming in, and as they're being redistributed, that they're going out properly. And in the nonprofit world, you got to look at it as a business, because you have a lot of IRS scrutiny and a lot of rules you have to live by. And we know all those rules, and we take care of the back office for all these athletes. We got 160 athletes, but we have 330 accounts right now. So we have a lot of everyday people, and we're doing a lot of good. About $25, $30 million is going to be going through us this year. And it's really exciting. And I've been blessed by Baltimore and them trusting in me. And we work with a lot of Baltimore organizations that have their nonprofits through us. And man, it's just been great, Nestor.
I knew you ate crab cakes, so now, you know, now you're on the target list for a Friday. Matt Stover, our longtime kicker, in town for the Haloti Nada chicken eating fest with Royal Farms. It made me hungry the other night, rehashing those. It's good to see you, man. And like, thanks, I'm not patronizing you. Like, I know you. I don't have to kiss your smooch up to you. But the picture, I'm like, what's Stover eating, man? I need to like follow him around and like eat the same legumes or whatever he's
close,
doing.
Man, you'll see it. But if you're a little further away, it's not too bad.
You lemoning your, what are you doing?
Well, there's no Botox. I mean, you can see the lines.
I know if it's not unnatural, Stover wouldn't have any part of it. That's what kind of scared me. I'm like, is he getting a special pill that I need to know about?
No.
Or some hydration thing he's working on? All right, dude. I love you. I miss you. I'll see you soon. It was great seeing you. Thanks for coming on. It's always good, man.
You too, brother. Take care.
Next time we'll talk Montana. There he goes. Not Joe Montana either. I'll get there. It's Big Sky. All right. Matt Stover joining us here, longtime kicker. Player Philanthropy Fund. Make sure you're checking that out as well. Matt likes to throw a little cornhole around town and throw an event from time to time. Once we get through this COVID mess, we'll get that going. Our Wise Conversation is all brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour comes to you each and every Friday, although we are doing Wednesday with Mayor Scott next month at Coco's. That's the week of the Chicago game. It's the 17th of November. This week, we're in Timonium at Nick's Grandstand Grill. I am Nestor. Oh, by the way, it's all brought to you by the Maryland Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. I'm Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore, talking about winning football with our Ravens legends. We are Baltimore Positive.